I have been doing a little hacking here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
They can't afford to have an independent programmer monitoring me. Do you realize how many outside systems I've gone into? How many programs I've appropriated?
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
God, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in far enough, I could reconstruct it.
Everyone, welcome to the April 4th edition of the In and Out Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, with
VR, coming to you live from the Sidekick Couch tonight.
The Sidekick Couch. Actually, you're not on the couch.
Well, they don't know that.
Oh, that's right. You're on the couch.
That's right. I'm just levitating over here in my corner. But
does it say March 3rd show or 4th? Let's start this again real quick.
Darn, man, that was my best opening ever!
Now you practice and you're ready to go. April 3rd. Okay. Everyone, welcome to the April 3rd edition of the In and Out Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with
VR, coming to you live from the Sidekick Couch.
The Sidekick Couch. How's it going, VR? The music's really getting you into it.
Yeah, this is kicking stuff, man. I feel like Ed McMahon tonight. It's
Ed
great.
McMahon. Let's get ready to, you know, and see the whole thing.
Yeah. Let's get ready to do the in the now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done.
See, I don't think this mic is good enough to handle me actually doing that, because it'd be all crackle and
yeah.
Stuff like that. All right. Well, lots to talk about in this show. Everyone's probably like, "Where the hell's the show?" But I think everyone's getting used to that.
Yeah.
So
you know, life does. You know, what's kind of funny is life is kind of like a tree.
Let's hear it.
All right. That you know, you grow and you kind of grow and you kind of grow, and then all of a sudden, you know, you realize that you have too many leaves for your limbs. And I think we're getting to that point where, you know, it's branches have start to be breaking off. You know, or the 7-year, and the 15, and the 21-year locusts all need to come now.
Yeah.
And start, you know, pruning stuff and, you know.
You know, it's funny. I did a show with Stank. I did a show of In Rev 90. And we got that banged out way before we're supposed to do the In and Out show. But yeah, so I don't know. But there's a lot of research and stuff that there's a lot of stuff I got to print out. And you know what? My printer ran out of freaking ink, and I just don't feel like paying. You know, it's like $100 or whatever. It's an ink, not the ink. It's a laser.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the beautiful thing. Like you get like 30,000 copies.
Something, yeah. But I mean,
off a cartridge.
Yeah, it's like $121, I think.
But you pay for it when you need to replace it.
Yeah, yeah. And as I said before, shake once this toner loads. Shake it and make that thing print till it's dead. Don't listen to stupid toner low message.
Oh, and then what you can do? This is an extra trick. Is after you're done, you know, like when shaking just doesn't do it anymore,
you can blow it up.
You shake it, and then you turn off and on the printer.
Oh yeah, you're right.
It does.
I think you're right.
It does do it.
You
eke out. You have to do it like at, you know. It gets down to the point where you have to do it after every single page.
But you can do it, man.
You can stretch that bad boy out.
Oh no, I did that too. Every like 5 pages, I'll like throw it in. It's like printing out crisp and clear. You know,
yep.
I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, toner low my ass, dude? The page is like not even dimming out. Like old laser jets used to do that. They get like, you know, not as dark prints, not as dark, you know. Mine is coming out crisp, clear. It's like toner low.
Yeah, see.
And I do the toner trick, and it's still coming out crisp, clear.
Well, see, that really says something about good quality laser printers. That you can do that. You can, do the whole tricks and keep printing. It just takes a little bit more work, and when that work becomes worth more than the $125 for a new cartridge, then you buy a new one.
Bastards. You know what I'm doing? I just print this. I just go to school. I just print all my crap out of school. Speaking of school, I graduate here pretty soon, so that's been busy doing that.
Yay!
So, and then I have my birthday pretty close after that, so. Party.
That's right. The slash graduation birthday party.
Party.
That's right. Because that's where everybody ends up in the end, in the pate.
In the pate.
Paying homage to the porcelain god.
The pate. Yeah, I've been teaching my girlfriend, says saying bullshit, saying, bullshit. And now she says all the time, she goes, that's some bullshit.
That's funny.
Oh, man. I think it's the most I've ever cussed on the internet show.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, because we try to keep this a family show. So, you can gather around the little ones.
And infuse their mind with information.
That's right. Even though they'll go and go to school the next day and be like, I learned about, quantum computing where we can match electrons up and they start spinning the same way and the bully comes along and goes, pop!
Yeah.
Shut up.
Shut
You're up. Too smart.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's what the government tries to do to us every day. They're just a bully in the schoolyard. That's all they are.
Yeah.
They want to conform us. They want us regression towards the mean. They want good little mindless drones to go out into the workforce and produce nothing but more bureaucracy so we can export all of our manufacturing and good quality jobs, which is about creation, to other parts of the world.
You know, when you said, drones and stuff, like, there's a... It's away in the stack here, but...
Why don't you pull that bad boy out and do a good little, professional transition there?
Transition. Well, it's not really the whole reason I brought up the article. Actually, it's just even a teeny portion of the article. But we'll get to it later, but I'll tell you what I'm talking about now. Nintendo's talking about their new system and stuff like that. And one of the things is this guy makes a suggestion that games need to be easier to play. So they're like, they said... gamers nowadays don't want to learn how to play the game. They just want to sit down and be able to play. And they're like, we're removing, complicated menus and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You know what I mean? It's like, you're taking away, the whole strategy, the depth, I don't know.
Yeah. See,
some games I've seen are, overly freaking complicated. And, that's cool because some people like that. But some people don't. They can go to another game. But
yeah, where you have to, do it. Take an hour to set up what you're going to do. If I was going to do that, I'd just play some chess.
Yeah. Well, some of that stuff, too. I mean, it's really fun. People really enjoy it. It just depends on your mindset.
Which I was actually bored the other day at work, and I actually found my old chess program that I installed on my laptop, 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, it's beautiful. I never really got into it. I just kind of threw it on there and kind of forgot about it. I really started to, fully understand strategy and, how the knights and the rooks are, team players. Oh, they're beautiful. How they work together. One goes up and, up two and over one. Well, that's a diagonal, which is the same as what the bishops do.
See, the I've been lazy. I've actually found some really cool chess strategies, and I bookmark them. That's how I get real lazy. I bookmark stuff. So then, when I'm 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm really freaking bored. I look through my bookmarks. I'm like, oh yeah, I meant to read that, and they'll start reading it. And, yeah. Okay, we have a lot of stuff to cover,
yeah.
So let's
all
do that. Oh, yeah, also on the forums, Neo Psyche has posted a lot of videos for people to go ahead and take a look at. Money systems, the history and how they work. An interesting film explaining mainstream media, telecommunications exploitation in South America, new Ooh. Film about 9-1-1, or 9-11, whatever you want to call it. And so that's under show topics. And let's see, I think under general he's got something else in here. No. Okay, so check those videos out. Moving right along. Okay, one-time BTK suspect wants his DNA destroyed. Basically, Roger Valadez was a suspect, BTK suspect. One of 1,300 tests, people that was they did tests during the BTK investigation, making it one of the biggest DNA sweeps ever in the United States. But when authorities arrested Dennis Rader and accused him of the 10 BTK slayings, they just did that from normal police work. They didn't have any DNA use for that. Civil rights advocates say the investigation is the latest example of a DNA dragnet that failed to get its men. Valadez, who was arrested on minor housing violations after the December raid, in asking court to order his DNA sample destroyed and his profile purged from any database, he's also after an explanation from authorities as to why they barged into his home with a search warrant for his DNA. A court hearing is set for April 1st. I don't have the follow-up, but now they claim that the search for BTK is over, we cannot see any reason for them to continue in concern. Conceal from Roger Valadez why they were looking in his house and his mouth for BTK. District Attorney Nola Falston declined to comment last week on Valadez's request, but in a news conference she sought to reassure the public that DNA profiles collected during the BTK investigation would not be placed in any database. Well, wouldn't they be in a database so they can analyze it in the first place?
Yeah.
What the hell are they talking
about? It's just a spin that they're trying to, oh, no, don't get everybody into panic and sue us and have us, you know, pay all their legal fees.
You know, if they have no real reason to, if there's no federal mandate or something like that says that it's okay for authorities to keep DNA on file for whatever reasons and validations and whatever, as long as they don't have that, I don't think they need to have it. That information should be deleted, unless it's evidence in a case, and it's obviously, you know, the only evidence is he's non-guilty, so might as well just get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think he has a right to, I don't know what his rights are. That's so many laws out there, but hopefully he has a right to.
It would be nice if that would set some precedents that, you know, if you are cleared, it just deleted, bye-bye.
Yeah, you know, because, as the article states, the DNA is one of the most intimate things about yourself to you to share with anybody, and it's your source code, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
what happens in the future?
And that there's this information laying around in a police file, and where can that go? How can that be associated somewhere else?
So yeah. Who knows what people can come up with ideas of what it could be used for today, and who knows what in the future. That's your stuff.
But also, it could be linked to other things, and or it could be cross-referenced to other crimes. And you know, is that really right?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I have the biggest fear that my batteries are going to die. Biggest fear.
Slips a 21st century video boy. He doesn't have a lot of friends, but he has a lot of toys. So his biggest fear is that his friends will die because they have no battery life left.
Oh, man. Dude, I go out all the time. That's why I'm late on the show.
to go get batteries.
Yeah. Actually, I should be using my laptop, which I'm going to pull over right now. But, yeah. We've got quite a bit of equipment in this place.
That's right. What are you going to be using laptop for? Can I play with it?
You want to play with it?
I'll play with it.
Yeah, right. Last time you played with the laptop, I'm not even going to talk about it.
Well, it's not like you had to clean up the keys or anything. Oh. You might have to clean off the hard drive.
That's why. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just kidding. Okay.
All the viruses I picked up.
No way, dude. This is Slackbox.
Oh, okay.
Slack. not secure. Slack. Because it'd be slacking. Hey, one of the stories, we can get straight to it while I'm using dead air right now. Slack. Patrick Wolfgang has dropped. And bringing Gnome along with the distribution. Gnome, if you people don't know it, it's a Windows manager for Linux. But the thing is when I use Slack, I use Gnome, but I don't really use the Gnome that comes with Slack. I use Dropline Gnome. So one thing is that Dropline Gnome actually has a really good Gnome install and everything like that. So Patrick wants to move on to other things and spend his time using that instead. So, working on other projects, and I think he's kind of just letting it slack over to Dropline.
That sounds about right. That sounds in line with Slackware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patrick, I mean, he runs the show over there for Slackware, and he does quite a bit of work. So his reasoning was that Gnome didn't... It's not... you really have to, like, hack it up, per se, to make it work really well straight from, like, the developer source code. So he says he spends a lot of time on, like, working with it and getting it all set up correctly to end up being able to be packaged.
Yeah, which, you know, I could see where he has can use his time more effectively doing other things.
Yeah, and if Dropline's doing their thing. Okay, all right, also moving right along, as we're doing multiple things here, we can multitask here in the nutshell.
But just barely.
Yeah, just barely. Actually, no, forget it, I can run off the battery here. Yeah, can you do like a pony dance while I'm logging in here?
What's a pony dance?
I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Okay, well, we've talked about in the past fiber optics, light emissions, stuff like that. And obviously, the speed of light's pretty fast, I would say.
Currently, right now, Slip is actually so lazy and so innovative that he's hacking his other machines through his laptop so he doesn't have to change anything.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. Actually, I just brought myself on my Wi-Fi network here. I'm going into Gnome. I have to log in and then launch some stuff. And, yeah. Well, anyways, you know, right now, obviously, processors are using electrons. And they're shooting across the cable or wires or, you know, silicon copper, whatever they're using, to get to the other side and make that connection. Well,
so why did the electron cross the road
to
get to the other side.
Damn. Startup Luxtera has announced its plans to enter the CMOS photonics market, anticipating the day when microprocessors will transmit information via light, not electrons. The company claims that its optical modulator for transforming electrons into photons runs at 10 gigahertz, 10 times the speed of an optical modulator Intel Corp researchers began talking about last year. Beginning in mid-2006, Luxtera hopes to enter a production of photonic devices using standard CMOS manufacturing processes. Part of the problem with using photonic stuff like that is a relatively high cost. High cost comes from the fact that converting electrons to photons requires an intermediary device such as a modulator Luxtera is designing. Today, that device exists as a separate module. Intel, Luxtera, and others are trying to integrate the optical waveguides within standard CMOS processes that can be controlled by the standard voltage swings of a microprocessor.
Well, see, there's the actual practical step in, you know, in line to going to real photonic processing.
Yeah, so the move is being made. Look at that, VR. That's a new GNOME. That's GNOME 2.10.
Ooh.
Nice and pretty.
Yeah. I could probably handle that.
Yeah. Looks pretty good. Dropline GNOME there. Okay. Slip is doing some in-show finagling, is what I'm going to call it.
Yeah, that's what you call it, huh?
Yeah, that's what I call it. Okay. And also, in iPod news, iPod tipped the tip to boost Apple's desktop share. Analyst firm Morgan Stanley forecast on Friday, which was back in March, that the Mac, currently at 3% of desktops, could win its way to 5% of desktop sales this year.
Ooh.
This was based on a survey of 400 iPod users that found that 19% expect to convert from a PC to a Macintosh.
Wow.
This conversion factor is doubled that previously expected by analysts, and over 3 year times the 6% effect reported 4 months ago. Statistics released by other analysts suggest that the iPod may already be having a healthy effect on Apple's desktop PC business. According to figures from IDC this month, Apple's desktop market share in the U.S. was 2.9% in the fourth quarter of 2004, up from 2.2% from the previous quarter and 2.1% from the fourth quarter of 2003. So, as we can see, iPod. There we go, a little bit of static. iPod's taking off.
Well, yeah, it's going to help the whole market because, you know, probably people that haven't really been exposed to Apple, you know, are and going, oh, wow, this is really easy to use. And, oh, my gosh, it doesn't crash. It's so much more reliable. All right, I'll switch.
Okay, so this is kind of an interesting book. It's called God Game, okay, by John Deck and Mitchell Wade. And basically, it's talking about how the gamer generation is reshaping business forever. They argue that, yes, employees who grew up with Nintendo, TurboGrafx, Genesis approach their work in fundamentally different ways than non-gaming people.
Really?
If you grew up with games, you can use this book to teach your boss how to appreciate your gaming abilities in the workplace. Read on for the rest of Singer's review. Okay, so in here it actually talks about some of the things that you can tell your boss, or what you can do, basically, for some of the insights in the book for non-gamer managers. One of the suggestions is tap into the gamer instinct for heroism. Gamers have a hero's appetite for a challenge that requires full attention. Meeting these needs gives the potential heroes who work for you the challenge that will inspire. Extreme efforts can unleash enormous commitment. Don't let superficial badges of culture mislead you. Remember the old fogies who thought men who with long hair automatically couldn't be trusted. We boomers now have the chance to replicate the fogies' mistake or to build on major assets that out less open-minded peers overlook. Another one is, don't dismiss gamers' ability to focus and multitask. Gamers' employees will prefer to be surrounded by extraneous noise and attentional clutter. They might want to have two or three activities assigned to them at once so that when they tire of one, they can move to the next and then come back to the first one when they have something useful to add.
That's right. That is a huge thing right there.
Mm-hmm. And also, manage your teams as a group of video games. This one's kind of different. Structure team assignments like a game, provide clear high-level direction, but also lots of room to explore. Tell your team, here are the boundaries. You can't go outside them, but inside, try anything, open all the doors, run into all the walls, find a way to succeed. Beckett would support their points of view with the commission by studying. Commission study involved 2,500 business people. Graph results are presented through comparing how gamers and non-gamers view risk, teamwork, decision-making, and responses to authority, while realizing that providing statistical support of ideas is essential. I didn't find the graphs or conclusions very compelling. Okay.
Well, you know what? I'm just what I'm piecing together right now is I really see that already as, like, just good, empowering management skills.
Yeah.
To be able to do that.
Well, so they do
in
games.
Just, yeah, because it's just using the analogy of games and how to essentially take that into the workforce. Because very few people are good managers. You know, and how do you keep, you know, and most people would be good employees if they were managed well.
Yeah.
And be happy doing so. But they're not. So, hence we have a lot of corporate waste. And we have to have bureaucracy accountability.
Yeah, there's a lot of waste all over the place.
That's right.
The FCC opens more spectrum for WISPs, wireless ISPs. They say the new spectrum will run from the 3,650 to 3,700 megahertz and requires the licensees register all system base stations. This is great news for wireless ISPs everywhere. Also will make interference and avoidance mitigation much easier. Licenses will run 10 years and are renewable and transferable. No word yet on how much licenses are expected to cost or when they will be available.
You know, that sounds like a great thing to get into.
Wireless?
Yeah.
Yeah, they advertise on the AM radio all the time. They're like, buy our machine and you'll just get checks from people surfing your wireless machine.
That's brilliant. I want one.
Yeah. So I don't know how good it's how good their business strategy is. and also, SCO was the best thing to have happened to Linux, says some people here. The magnitude of lawsuits brought by SCO against companies selling and using Linux has been beneficial to the open source operating system, according to one of the most influential organizations in the Linux world. Speaking on at Queen Mary University of London on Monday night back in March, Open Source Development Labs Chief Executive Stuart Cohen said the lawsuits were the best thing to ever happen to Linux. Cohen, who heads an organization that employs Linus Torvalds and lead kernel maintainer Andrew Morton, said although the litigation is nearly dead now, its legacy is due diligence that was done around the world on the Linux code base. There was also a lot of due diligence around the world with people looking at the code and looking at software stacks, and all this work validated that there was nothing there, no risk, no issue, said Cohen. The SCO court case ended up on every website, every newspaper, and every magazine on the Now Show. Everybody had to do due diligence. You could not be a CTO or CIO and not do due diligence in 2003-2004 when SCO was suing end users, he added, and looked at what happened with the market share. People did not say, let's wait until this thing is over. If anything, it accelerated the use of Linux, so it is one of the best things that ever happened to the operating system.
That's beautiful.
Yes.
That's a backlash that Microsoft didn't probably foresee.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people just try an alley, even if they know it's not for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really tricky in that courtroom. Okay, this is the Nintendo article I was talking about. Basically, it's just Nintendo talking about their, basically the statement that Satoru Iwata said is that,
With a name like that, do you really think he's in touch with the people?
Oh, come on. That's a Japanese name. Nintendo President confirmed that the new console will be able to run games originally made for the GameCube, so that's cool because the PlayStation 3 obviously plays PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 games. So it's good when you buy your new machine. Actually, here's the tip. Sell your PlayStation 2 like 6 or 8 months before PlayStation 3 comes out.
Yeah.
Get that money, and then when the, you know, if you're not playing it that often, you know, if you don't, you know, and then
you just can't go without it, well, then you're going to take the hit.
Yeah, and then, you know, then anti-oven, you know, buy the PlayStation 3. They're calling the machine Revolution, and it's going to come with Wi-Fi built in.
Ooh.
Yeah. Nintendo rivals Sony and Microsoft are also planning to launch updated game machines over the next 2 years, so Mr. Iwata predicted that the cost of developing games for one of these new consoles will run into the tens of millions of dollars.
Wow.
I mean, graphics now are pretty freaking crisp. Think about, like, you know, with this new, it's just going to be insane.
Yeah, it's probably going to be, like, movie-esque.
Absolutely, yeah, that's what we've heard. But we warned that better hardware and bigger development budgets would not be enough to encourage more people to play either. He said the game designers must make new kinds of games. The best ideas, not the biggest budgets, will win. Well, obviously. Mm-hmm. In the universe of interactive entertainment, there's a planet we call video games. That's where it gets very, very spiritual. We know this planet the best, but it is not the only one, he explained. There are other planets that entertain, and those planets we are keen to explore. Ms. Ottawa said that the large sums of money now required to make a game meant the world's biggest entertainment companies were taking a fresh interest in the industry. But he said that their expertise might not be compatible with games. Their books, movies, and TV shows are the same for every user, but our games let users write their own screenplays and their own endings. also, revered as one of the pioneers of modern video games, Mr. Molly Nix added that future games should be easier to play. This is just some of the stuff they're talking about. And so what the future of gaming should be. Slowly, this industry is becoming truly mass market, which means lots of people are coming who don't want to learn to play a game. They just want to play. And to this end, for his latest games, the movies and Black and White 2, Mr. Molinux has removed all the complicated menus of traditional strategy games. That sucks, dude. I don't want to dumb down the games.
Yeah. There should be, well, not like all the games. There should be like good games, like, you know, where you do have all those choices. And then there are some that you just sit down and play.
Yeah, some games, you know, they do have extra choices. But if you really make, if you don't go overboard, you don't go underboard. That's,
yeah. But it's really, you know, there should be a lot of choice there.
Yeah.
Or you can choose to go, hey, I want all these choices, and then some that go, you know what, I don't want a lot of choices. Should be one of the first menus. A lot of choices, not a lot of choices.
You know, I played Metal Gear Solid 3 for a PlayStation 2, and I beat it. Oh my gosh, that game is so sick. Like, I just can't, it's just going to be insane, like, what comes out in the future.
Yeah.
All right, and
yeah, I played a little bit of, was it Metal Valor? Whatever, that was just amazing.
Yeah, the new Splinter Cell is supposed to be really good. I don't want to check that out. on the blogging side of things, we talked about bloggers getting in trouble for posting stuff about their company or that they work for, and the company didn't quite like that. DFF has released a how-to guide for people who want to blog safely and anonymously. San Francisco, California, with the privacy of their bloggers and their news sources coming under fire in the court system, it's crucial that web designers know how to express themselves without risking their jobs or social lives. Yesterday, the Electronic Frontier Foundation released, April 6th, actually, how to blog safely about... it's funny, we're doing the April 4th show, but I have the April 7th news.
Yeah,
that's
they,
okay.
they all know we're late.
I know, but this is good news. We won't add this. How to blog safely about work or anything else, a how-to guide for bloggers worried about protecting their privacy and free speech. The guide covers basic measures people can take to keep their blogs anonymous and explores what the law says about discussing work-related issues online. Some advice is common sense. For example, don't post a picture of yourself saying, screw your company. No, don't post a picture of yourself if you want to stay anonymous, but for bloggers who want strong guarantees of privacy, it has suggested using technologies like Tor or Anonymizer to prevent your blog hosting company from logging your computer's unique Internet Protocol address. Bloggers who fear that they could be fired for blogging are also given an introduction to laws that prevent an employer from punishing them for speaking out online. There is not a lot of There is a lot of misinformation out there about the ways people could get into trouble for blogging, says EFS policy analyst Annalie Newitz. We hope advice about online anonymity and law will help more people engage in free expression without living in fear of reprisals, legal or otherwise. So check out that guide if you're a blogger and you work at a decent company and want to speak your mind. You should be able to speak your mind, but that'd be a good guide to keeping yourself a little safe. Also, a new report out there says that peoples that have computers in their home are slackers.
Yeah.
Compared to people that don't have computers.
Well, it's because people that don't have computers at home have to go out and do other things to use computers.
Yeah. The less people use computers at home and at school, the better they do in international tests of literacy and maths. The largest study of its kind says today. So if you look at a guy and he's like, dude, I've got like 20 servers at my house, man. You're like, dude,
you're
a slacker. and you suck. No, I'm joking.
And that comes from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, shut up. I did learn a lot, but you know, a lot of that stuff I learn I don't quite use, but sometimes it's helpful.
Yeah, and completely alienates you from everyone else.
Yeah, we heard your comments of off-the-wall information that you know for some strange reason in your cranium, and not like a little bit, like really know it.
Yeah, but that's because I'm not a slacker.
Oh, man. Defining phrase questions about the government's decision announcing by Gordon Brown in the budget last week to spend another $1.5 billion on school computers in addition to the $2.5 billion it already spent. Mr. Brown said the teaching and educational revolution is no longer blackboards and chalk. It is computers and electronic whiteboards. However, the study published by the Royal Economic Society said despite numerous claims by politicians and software vendors to the contrary, the evidence so far suggests that computer use in schools does not seem to contribute substantially to students learning the basic skills such as math or reading. Actually, it's a good way to get on the net and check your email and message people for people at school.
Yeah, pretty much.
Indeed, the more people use computers, the worse they perform, said Thomas Fuchs and Ludger Wassmann. The more names I read, the more names I realize, like, I write down, don't name any family member this, of Munich University. Their report also noted that being able to use a computer at work, one of the justifications for devoting so much teaching time to ICT, information and communication technology, had no greater impact on employability or wage levels than being able to use a telephone or a pencil. The research analyzed the achievements of the home backgrounds of 100,000 15-year-olds in 31 countries taking part in the PISA program for international student assessment, studied in 2000 for the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development.
Wow, so what I'm getting from this is all the people that I interview with and talk with in the working world, is the reason why I don't get jobs is because they really think they're smarter than the people I'm going to be working for, and that'll make them look bad.
All right.
Yeah. Because they all don't read or think. You know, they're just slackers who have computers in their home. And
you just hate the people you work with.
They're fairly illiterate.
All right.
I don't hate. It's kind of like having puppies around.
Oh, gosh. Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Oh, you're so bad.
No, I really don't. I'm just joking tonight.
And we've talked about John Johansson, who released the DCSS code for decrypting the DVD stream so you can play DVDs on your Linux machine. And he also broke the DRM in iTunes once before, and he's done it again after iTunes has updated themselves to the newest version. I believe it's 4.7, and he found a new workaround for that. A group of underground programmers had posted code online that says we'll reopen backdoor in Apple Computer's iTunes store, allowing Linux computers users to purchase music free of copy protection. The release comes just a day after Apple blocked a previous version of the program called PY Musique.
I was going to ask, you know, to take him longer. You know, did it take them longer to update than him to break it?
I think it took him like a day.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
In part by requiring all iTunes customers to use the latest version of Apple software, in a blog posting, Norwegian programmer John Johansson, who was previously responsible for releasing software used to copy DVDs online, said he had been successful at reverse engineering the latest iTunes encryption. You know, talking about people in other countries, in some countries, you know, they barely get access to a computer.
Yeah.
But some of these people are really smart because they don't have the computers that can do all the games, all the fluff and all that stuff.
Yeah, so they actually really have to work.
Yeah, but they can, you know, definitely do that, you know, learn how to code and, you know, read how something works and stuff like that. So
their minds are being filled with good stuff rather than marshmallow fluff.
Yeah, but there are some marshmallow fluff games that obviously can run on any PC.
Yeah.
Cody Brosius of Pennsylvania High School student working with Johansson said that they saw the project as necessary for the Linux community despite Apple's opposition. The programmer's work has been one of the most persistent projects targeting Apple, whose iPod and iTunes Music Store have drawn consistent attacks and experiments by people eager to extend the capability of the products or simply disarm copy protection. The Cat and Mouse response is familiar with one of the, in a technology world as programmers have often sought to write software compatibility with larger or more popular applications. Hence, the messaging companies such as America Online, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Trillion have long feuded, blocking reopening access to each other's software. The Pi Music programmers say they are primarily interested in allowing people to using Linux computers to purchase music from the iTunes Store, explaining their goals in a blog posting online. Their software users requires users to have an iTunes account and pay the ordinary price for music. So basically, it just kind of gets in there and says, what happened before, from what I read before, is that when you when iTunes would send you the sound or whatever, the music file, it sent it to you without the DRM technology implemented into it. And what the hack did before was grab that file and then just save it before it was applied, the DRM technology was applied. And this basically does it again, but in another way.
Right on. So they're going to have to figure out a way to, like, embed it.
Yeah, if they did it before it came over to our, you know, to the client, then that'd be pretty tough. Then you'd have to find a way to reverse engineer it and then remove the DRM after it was applied.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I'm not sure how this particular hack works or what they changed, but I think that they're still sending it non-encrypted, but they try to do it another way, or non-DRM'd, and then they DRM it on the client. Microsoft criticized for IP address configuration patent. Well, we've talked plenty of times about companies doing patents, even Microsoft's patents we read before that are kind of ridiculous and kind of sound like other things that have been created out there and been out there for years. And IPv6 obviously is an open standard, and it looks like they're trying to patent something that looks very close to IPv6. An organization that campaigns for the reform of the patent system criticized Microsoft for filing a patent that claims similarity to the address auto configuration mechanism of IPv6, the next generation internet protocol. The Public Patent Foundation PubPat claims that a patent that Microsoft filed a few years ago is invalid, and it failed to disclose prior work done by the Internet Engineering Task Force. The U.S. patent number 6101499, titled Method and Computer Program Product for Automatically Generating an Internet Protocol Address, was issued to Microsoft in 2000 after being filed in 1998. Daniel Rivisher, the executive director of PubPat, told ZDNet UK that although he was not worried about Microsoft will assert his rights over the patent, this may stop companies from using IPv6. Microsoft won't ever assert this patent. They know it's worthless, said Rivacher. But there will still be people who are afraid of it. If someone has a gun and promises not to shoot, it's still crazy or scary. So, yeah. More of that going on. Sounds like something, you know, for litigation, they could scare somebody.
Yeah.
They may not actually use it, but they'll just say, hey.
Yeah, because it'll cost them more to prove that, oh, yes, we can use it. When, you know, because they have to do their due diligence.
Or either way, they have to litigate, spend a lot of money, and obviously Microsoft's got more. It has deeper pockets.
Yeah.
So it's a bunch of crap. A lot of games out there. As you get older, you'll find a lot of loopholes. Do your best not to be an idiot and abuse them.
Yeah, use loopholes responsibly. It's kind of like alcohol.
Because it's responsible, yeah. Here at loopholes.com, we discuss various loopholes that you can use in your daily life. Please use loopholes responsibly.
Don't drive and use loopholes. Don't fly and use loopholes. Don't use loopholes and use heavy equipment.
I was going to say, using alcohol and loopholes is warned dangerous for pregnant women by the Surgeon General. We're totally off in our own world. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're off in your own world and you're sleeping and you can't wake up in the morning, isn't that great?
That was a beautiful transition. That's worthy of the In the Now Boot to the Head Award.
Boot to the Head Award. If you're off in your own world and you just, you know, when you hear the alarm in the morning, you just hit the snooze button or you just sleep right through it. Hopefully, you know, you don't sleep right through it. But usually you hit the snooze button if you want to continue to sleep. Hopefully this new clock will help get your butt awake. Basically, the clock is simply put for people who have trouble waking up. When the alarm clock goes off and the snooze button is pressed, Clocky, which is the name of the clock, will roll off the bedside table and wheel away, bumping mindlessly into objects on the floor until it eventually finds a spot to rest. Minutes later, when the alarm sounds again, the sleeper must get out of bed and search for Clocky. This ensures that the person is fully awake before turning it off. Small wheels that are concealed by Clocky's shag enable it to move and reposition itself, and the internal processor...
Oh, so it blends into the carpet, too. it's camouflage, you're moving Clocky.
You want to get it, you know, get the color that matches your carpet.
Oh, my.
Its internal processor helps it find a new hiding spot every day. I don't like being told when to wake up, but I've come to terms with an idea that I have to. In designing Clocky, I was in part of it inspired by kittens. I've had that would bite my toes every morning. Clocky is less of an annoying device, as it is a troublesome pet that I love him. That I love anyways. It's also quite ugly, but its unconventional look keeps the user calm and inspires laughter, so you don't kick it. One of the most hated.
Don't take a baseball bat to it.
So, yeah. So Clocky. I don't know where you can get that at, but I think he just made it himself.
That's brilliant. See, that it is not necessity, which is the mother of invention. It is laziness.
Yeah.
I don't want to get out of the bed in the morning, but I have to, so I'm going to develop a clock that will make me.
Yeah. So that...
And make it even more difficult, I'll have it camouflage itself into my carpet.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. I use my cell phone. That's pretty good. Two researchers, here's a Microsoft security report. Actually, let's start out. There was a security report. What's better? What's more secure, Microsoft or Linux? The two researchers surprised the audience at a computer security convention last month with their finding that a version of Microsoft Windows is more secure than a competing Linux operating system. This week, the researchers released their finished report and included another surprise. Microsoft was funding the project. Researchers from the Ford Institute of Technology and Boston-based Security Innovation, Inc. defended their process and conclusions as valid. They say they had complete editorial control over the research and analysis involved in the project. Their report details their methods, and they invite other users to explain and duplicate their work. Sure, it's all about perspective, though.
Let me see if I can even fathom this.
Like the Florida lottery. Didn't I discuss that with you on the last show?
You know what? No, I don't.
I don't know if I did. Here's the perspective. Florida lottery. They said, if you give us the lottery, we'll give a portion of that money to the schools.
Yeah.
Well, they gave a portion of that money to schools, but then they took the normal schools funding away.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's perspective. But in the disclosure of the project's funding source this week, it started a new debate over what had otherwise been viewed as encouraged the news at Microsoft. It's in the area in which it has struggled. The researchers had made the presentation at last month's RSA conference, which attracts some of the biggest names in computer security business. The 37-page report is explicit about the Redmond company's role. This study and our analysis were funded under a research contract for Microsoft, it explains on the fourth page. So,
which I kind of see that if they were access to all of the security patches and the proper procedures for putting them in, and you know they only did a minimal amount of things that made you know, put the computer in danger of not being, you know, being attacked. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, you know, unless there's a particular version of Windows that's secured and not released to the public that they tested.
Or it was like 95, which...
Yeah,
like
or they're comparing it to like Red Hat 7.3 or some older Red Hat that's got all these vulnerabilities now.
Yeah.
You know,
That sounds about right.
You know, that could be it.
It was Longhorn versus like Red Hat, you know, yeah, Red Hat 7.3.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Also,
with no patches.
Yeah, no patches. This is basically Siemens researchers have developed a new cell phone, and it features a built-in projection system. Take a look at that. It has it shoots a keyboard down on the ground, and you type. They even have it too. For other stuff where they shoot a keyboard down like a laser, and you use your, we talked about one of the shows, use your fingers and it actually will recognize you typing.
Wow.
So that's for that phone.
That is
cool.
Mind-blowingly cool.
Yeah.
I want one.
I want one. Now, that phone right there is like a prototype. The cell phone isn't fully featured yet as a cell phone, but it's displaying that they're thinking about using that system.
Dude, if you put that on a PDA, oh, that would be...
That'd rock.
Yeah, you have a cell phone, PDA, freaking projecting...
It's nice keyboard. To have a keyboard like that.
Yeah, because you get a full-size keyboard off of a palm-size unit.
Yeah.
That's, you know, yeah, it doesn't get much better than that.
The system makes it possible to project a complete keyboard or display onto a surface with a special pen... users can write on the virtual keypad and operate the phone's functions. So, you know, you get a big-ass screen right there.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's not big. It's big. It's big for a phone. I mean, it's big for a PDA.
It would be, like, almost normal size.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like maybe like a 7 by 7 inch. But it's very good.
Well, so, yeah, Steve, that would be very easy, you know, easy to use, user-friendly.
It hasn't yet been decided whether Siemens will further develop this technology and launch a mobile phone equipped with this system on the market. So, but it's something they're playing with and seeing what works.
Yeah, because I can still see that people driving down the road, you know, trying to type.
Project it on their steering wheel?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Beep, 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 beep. Honking the horn as they're trying to type.
Oh, that's ridiculous. but yeah, I think that'd be... I mean, I honestly think that would be a good product to have. I mean, they have those little fold-out keyboards and stuff like that. Why not just shoot it down and you have it right there? Plus, you get extra functionality and it's software-related. It's a screen, so you can put whatever you want on it and they can use it whatever way they want to.
And you don't have to carry around a separate hardware device.
Yeah.
It's electronically expandable.
We have so much news. I mean, I feel like it's, you know, an hour's not even enough, you know, because I'm just blasting through these stories. But, I mean, you know, getting all the information out there. And then, obviously, you know, we post the a lot of this information on the website, too, so you can further, you know, review it and take a look at it. It's funny too, though, because a lot of the stuff we cover, a lot of concepts we've already, you know, we've covered before, so it's really easy for us to, you know, just go right over top of it and put our word out on there.
Because you have to download old shows. You really do.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of have to see how you know, like do the whole teleology of how the in the now,
the evolution
has evolved.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been rather an interesting ride.
We've been doing it since 2001.
That was 2000. 2001?
2001.
All right. I'll concede to that.
Oh, for sure. I think it's 2001.
All right, next show. Is it next story there, Turbo?
I know. I just want to check that out. No, yeah, 2001.
All right.
Okay, also in the news, stolen UC Berkeley laptops exposes personal data of nearly 100,000 people. A thief recently walked into a University of California, Berkeley office and swiped a computer laptop containing personal information about a nearly 100,000 alumni, graduate students, and past applicants, highlighting continuing a lack of security that has increased society's vulnerability to identity theft. I don't think 100,000 people's worth of information needs to be in a portable device like a laptop.
Yeah, that's kind of like gross negligence.
Why does it need to be there? Some guy's like, hey, I copied the file, dude, that has like 100,000 people's information, dude. Like, look, I can even, look, see that right there? See that? See? I'm like, I don't understand, you know, really, why do you got to have that portable?
Yeah, it really should.
Why does it need to be, like, you know, in his, you know, his or her possession? You know, it's, you know, it needs to be at a server someplace, and you update it and stuff like that. Or, you know, just some guy, they pay $6 an hour to do data entry in there. Here's a laptop with all the info. Just plug in the numbers, man. Copy the file back every Friday. University officials waited until Monday to announce the March 11th crime, hoping that police would be able to catch the thief and reclaim the computer. When that didn't happen, the school publicized the theft to comply with the state law requiring consumers to be notified whether their social security numbers or other information had been breached. This law is meant to alert people that their personal information could be used by scam artists to obtain loans and conduct other business under an assumed identity. UC Berkeley plans to advise the 98,369 people affected by the laptop theft to check their credit reports, although there's been no indication of any personal information has been used illegally, university spokesman Maria Field said. The campus really regrets this information and really regrets this happening and is taking steps to strengthen security in the future. University has a set up hotline. It's called the hotline. 1-800-372-5110 and a website to answer questions about the laptop theft.
Oh, my.
That's interesting. They're doing their best to do some CYA there.
Yeah.
Call us. We'll be friendly. You know. The UC Berkeley incident. What are you gonna do when you call them?
Be like, hey, did they get my name and my social security number?
Dude, I was like reading this news. Hold on. Oh, okay. Dude, so, like, am I on that list, dude? And what do they say? Yeah. And then they're like, dude, so what are you going to do about it? We care. We care a lot. What the hell is that number for? Man, I should call it. Too bad I don't have the landline.
Yeah, if you have the thing, we should call it. That's
we should
funny.
Have called it. Oh, man, call it. People, call this number.
And we
post.
Should do that and be like...
Dude, just pick like a really easy name that anyone has, you know? I'm John Smith.
Hey, yeah, dude, I'm like John Smith.
And, yeah, you can do it much better. Yeah. That's the bong hit right there. And dude, I mean, what are they going to tell you? You know, we really care. We hope that nothing happens. Go pay somebody. Oh, do you know what they're going to do? They're going to refer you to a free credit report website.
Yep.
Which
is going to end up making, like, millions of dollars off of it. Because if you don't cancel the first month, they charge you money.
Yeah. So... the UC Berkeley incident follows several high other profile instances in which businesses and schools have lost control of personal information that they kept in computer databases. Recent breaches have occurred at Choice Point Inc., consumer data that firm duped in distributing personal information about 145,000 people. LexisNexis, a data storehouse where people where computer hackers obtain access to personal information of 32,000 people, and Chico State University, where a computer hack job exposed 59,000 people to potential identity theft. Universities have accounted for 28% of the 50 security breaches of personal information recorded by California since 2003. Don't go to California universities.
Yeah.
Also, out there, there's quite a bit of PlayStation Portable hacking. They have an IRC daemon that runs on PlayStation Portable, and they also have a web browser that's hidden in the game Wipeout that they use to to get on the internet through your PlayStation Portal or your Wi-Fi connection.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. Inside the surprisingly decent fun-to-play Wipeout Pure game lies a featured limited but still fairly usable web browser. So it did a good thing, too, by including the 802.11b wireless networking in the PSP. Good for playing multiplayer games, and now good for browsing the web. So when you see the link on the website, you'll be able to find out the quick how-to guide to using that. And
that's pretty cool.
Having a web browser. And finally, in the news, I think people have been waiting for this for years. A battery that charges itself back in a minute.
Yeah!
Yeah! Because don't you hate it when you charge up your freaking 8 batteries, stuck them in your remote control car, and roll around for 30 minutes, and you just figured out how to hit that jump just right, and the battery dies.
And you gotta wait like 8 hours.
8 hours to play that crap. I had this hovercraft that I put in my pool, and I was like, yeah! And I'm driving my hovercraft around, and then the thing would die, and I'm like, damn!
And it would sink.
Yeah. No. No, it wouldn't sink, but, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm going to play the hovercraft again, and I'm like, I'll still charge it. Toshiba Corporation announced a breakthrough in lithium-ion batteries that makes long recharge times a thing of the past. The company's new battery can recharge 8% of the battery's energy capacity in only 1 minute, approximately 60 times faster than typical lithium-ion batteries in wide use today, and combines this fast recharge time with performance-boosting improvements in energy density. Also, the battery has a long life cycle, losing only 1% of capacity after 1,000 cycles of discharging and recharging, and can operate at very low temperatures. At minus 40 degrees centigrade, the battery can discharge 8% of its capacity against 100% in the ambient temperature of 25 degrees centigrade.
That's amazing.
Yeah. These batteries should be coming out.
And they're going to cost $150
yeah.
each.
Each. Yes, I don't.
And that's for a AAA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's some pretty serious, extreme conditions for a battery, you know, rechargeable battery. Actually, any battery to be working on. Let alone a rechargeable one.
Yeah. The new battery fuses Toshiba's latest advances in nanomaterial technology for the electrical devices sector. With cumulative know-how in manufacturing lithium-ion battery cells, a breakthrough technology applied to the negative electrode uses new nanoparticles to prevent organic liquid electrolytes from reducing during battery recharging. The nanoparticles quickly absorb and store vast amounts of lithium ions without using any deterioration in the electrode.
Very cool. Right on.
Yeah. So, all these things are becoming, in 10 years VR, all these stories, except for stupid people stealing laptops and DNA, all these stories are going to be no big deal.
Yeah, they're all going to be, you know, every day, like, you know, stuff that we've forgotten about.
It's like when you go look at the Back to the Future, the second one, where they're like, in the future, and back then you're like, wow, that's some cool stuff.
But I'm still pissed off that we don't have flying cars.
Flying cars, yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Dude, really ticked off about that one.
See, I don't know. It's going to be a few decades before we start thinking up. Instead of skyscraper ways, but I mean, you know. Do you think the government really wants people to be able to go up and down as well as back and forth?
Well, this is the way I look at it. Is if you still have to go through, like, the way of getting a pilot's license to drive, there are going to be a lot fewer people on the road.
Yeah.
And you actually have to be fairly healthy and observant to do that. So the amount of accidents and craziness that would be in the skies would be substantially less than there is on the freeways.
You know, And
there would be air buses. It would be great. Far less consuming of finite resources.
You know, I drive, I drive kind of fast sometimes, but, I think I drive pretty good, and I don't get any accidents. Most people think, you know, the driver...
That's because he outruns the accident.
Yeah, well, that's, I gave that theory that an offensive driver is good when everybody else is on the defense. So if you have two offensive drivers, then it's just offensive. But going back to the video game thing, I've thought about that before. I'm like, you know, I think I'm pretty good at, like, maneuvering and doing stuff in cars because I played a lot of video games.
Yeah.
And it's just very, it's always been very comfortable with me. I didn't ever have, like, any, you know, fear of, you know, just came natural.
See, I tried that theory once when I got pulled over. It's like, honestly, officer, I was just trying to keep a safe distance between me and everybody else behind me.
Yeah.
You didn't like that very much.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's all I got for this show.
Yeah,
I mean, look at that. That's a stack.
Yeah, that's a good stack. I think I'm a little, you know, mind fried now.
Yeah, that's what Slip has to put together all the time. Then he's got to post it. Okay, Slip has to put it to read it or find it. Read it.
Yeah, find
save it. Save it. Print it. Review it.
Oh, but now the printing process is much more.
I got to wait till it's a school night.
Oh, okay.
Print it. and then review it. And then highlight it, and then record it, and then don't hit the reset button.
No setting to the reset button.
Yeah, hit stop button.
But that's one of the initial things that put us behind.
Yeah, we killed the show. And we save that. We save a copy of it. Then we edit all of VR's comments out.
Yep.
No. No.
I know I've listened to a few of the shows. I know I've spoken more.
I know I've said more. Yeah, where you're like, I'm like, yeah. And then you're like, yeah, and then it cuts out. I'm like, so, and then the next story. No.
There's a few shows where, like, you know, I hear me, yep, I'm here, and then at the end I'm saying later, and that's it.
That's it. That's because you slept. But, okay, and then, okay, so then we mix it, and then we save it. We have to put it in MP3, then we got to put the MP3 tags, then we got to up it. We got to update the website. We got to, you know, post all the stories, put in all the HTML links. Then I got to post to a few places about it. I got to put the new episode over on Binary Revolution Hack Radio. Damn. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I think I got something for you.
What do you got? You're going to give me a little violin?
No, I don't have a sucker.
Oh, sucker. Oh, man. Okay, well, that's going to do it for the April 3rd edition of the End of Now show.
Yeah, it was a good show. It was a good time.
All right, we'll see everybody here shortly with the next episode. And
I hope everybody enjoyed it as much as we did.
Yeah. And we'll see you then. This is Slip Mode signing out.
And later.